everyone. You love the music, now be a part of the movement. Press Play is building a home for artists and fans just like you, and now you can help shape it. All you gotta do is go to pressplay.me and grab you some merch and wear it really loud and really proud, and of course, buy it for everybody you know. And know that you're helping musicians and music stay real, independent, and alive. And here's something really special. You can send a personal message to the artist of your choice. If we've done an interview with them, you have an opportunity to write them a note. You can write them a small message, or you can write them a whole letter, and it will go directly to them. Just click the link on any of our interviews, write from the heart, and let your voice be heard. So tune in, rock with us, and press play. Get the gear, send the love. Music lives when the fans do.
This is actually a great segue to kick it off. You know, we got Sass Jordan, Brian Tishy, Something Unto Nothing. You've got your...
Whatever that means, Sass. What the hell does that even mean?
This is why it's a good segue with Gene. So, you know, Gene is in, it was a year or two ago, he made the comment that rock is dead. And, you know, Sass, you and I talked about that. But you listen to this album, and there's no way you can say rock is dead, because this is pure rock from the classic formula. This album.
Thanks.
Would you disagree with that?
Nope. No, we've resurrected it from the grave.
Damn straight. Yeah. So what's the genesis of it? How did this album come about?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because we're mostly influenced by early Genesis, and that's what got us together. We were both on a Genesis fan club website, and I was like, whoa, there's Sass. And, right? No? Oh.
Was it the 80s Genesis? But is it 80s Genesis or 70s Genesis?
It was 70s. We were going deep, you know?
This is
the problem with Sass and I doing these things. It's like, as soon as I see her and she starts laughing, it's like, oh, cool, I can maybe make her laugh again. And that's all I start thinking about. Can I do things to make Sass laugh? We get nowhere. I can't even believe we got a record accomplished many years ago. You know, we don't even say hi. We're like, hey, what's up? I don't even know who
and
I'm talking
funny.
To. Who's everybody here? I'm Brian Tishy. What's up? I'm in a band called Something Unto Nothing with Sass Jordan. And who are you guys?
Well, this is...
I should know this while we're getting into doing this whole thing, right?
Absolutely. He actually doesn't know.
Like, there's five of us here, and I know three. I know, hi, Dean. I don't know the others, because I came in late. But it technically wasn't late. It was 11:58, and it starts at noon. So I was just, like, late compared to everybody else who's really early.
Yeah, so I guess the backstory, Don Thatcher, myself, I started doing content on TikTok a few years back. As a result, met Don. Then Don and I started doing interviews together. And along the way, we merged an organization that we created called FM 2.0, which was essentially a radio channel focusing on new music from legacy artists and emerging artists that have kind of a legacy style vibe, which ended up merging into another company called Press Play, which Tina was the CEO of. So it's all three of us now focusing on this new platform that we've been building, a music-related platform. So it's about, you know, just creating a lot of content.
So Press Play is not just an app that we signed into to do this. It's actually the show you all created.
It's a show. It's actually a full music platform that we're about to launch. It's pretty cool. At least I think.
Cool.
Brian, just so you know, I actually built you a page in Mosaic, which is the platform that we are building, part of it anyway. So I've learned a lot about you.
Wow.
Well, can I just say?
I feel like, see, she's waiting for me to say something. I feel like there's a little bit of like a Snoopy stalker vibe going on here now.
Kind of was over the last couple of days. I'm not going to lie.
It's just the way you said it. You go, and I've learned a lot about you.
Well, just real quick, Brian, I grew up, I think, about 15 minutes from where you grew up in Denver.
And you were the guy that used to, it was like 2 a.m., and you'd be like lurking around my backyard.
Yeah, that was me. I grew up in Hackettstown, just so you know. I grew up in Hackettstown, New Jersey.
That's all right. Yeah, I'm Parsippany. I was going to say all the hacks.
46,
from Hackettstown. Is that what you guys call yourself? We're the hacks, you know?
Yeah.
Are you the parsnips?
Parsnips. Oh yeah, I guess I get parsnippany.
It's all on 46. That's all you gotta know.
Yeah. 46.
Anyhow, did. We got to talk about what we can. Or
we will.
Yes.
Wow. Well, the content. The content from this interview is going to end up in several different places. It'll end up on TikTok, YouTube, our channel. There's going to be a ton of sound bites that I'm going to repeat on air when I'm on air on SiriusXM. I like to work in stories into that. So yeah, that's the purpose here, is just to get a lot of talking points.
Cool. Yes. One time I tried to get Sass to rhyme the word purpose with porpoise and she wouldn't go for it. And I thought we lost like what I was going to be our biggest song ever. And still bums me out to this day. So whenever I hear the word purpose, it just gets me a little sad. Look at her. Anyways.
All right. Well, in the announcement, Dean, if I could ask this, it said that there always must be a beginning and there always must be an end. But while you're here, it's all about the message you send. You wrote that, right, Sass?
Sounds like something.
You guys dig it.
Yeah.
Brian, I don't know who wrote it. I honestly don't remember because it was a couple of minutes ago. But it sounds exactly like something we would have written, one of us, just sitting there laughing. Trying to figure out what the name is. Well, the reason we came up with the name Something Unto Nothing was because we loved the name Sun, and we wanted to find something that would fill in the
acronym.
Not that bright. Yeah. Okay, yes, an acronym. So we want to find something, and that's what we came up with. And it's quite profound once you start thinking about it. You know, and then it really does kind of, it did sort of like segue into a lot of the songs, which are very profound.
Didn't hurt that we're smoking a ton of pot back
then. He's lying, because we weren't, because I don't smoke it, neither does he.
Yeah, but Sass is right. We had a song, I had an acoustic thing, and I was like, just let's make it long. And I don't know what's so funny about that. I mean, I wanted to be like an epic song.
Let's write a song. Let's make it long. That's how we're starting.
Long song.
So if she'd had a verse, I was like, just double it. If we did a little guitar thing, double that. So it was a long thing. And I go, it's like, I don't know, what should I write about? I go, I don't know, everything under the sun. Why don't we just call it Sun? And then Sun was like, well, we could make an acronym out of that, Something Unto Nothing. And it just happened. And then we're like, well, why don't we just call the band that? Now we've got a song called that, and a band called that. And now we feel like, you know, we're a little more important than we were an hour ago. And that was it. But that song, along with all of them, it was a lot of fun to watch this become what I thought may have been a Sass Jordan demo for a potential song on her next solo record is what I kind of thought we might at best get. And nothing that I don't mean to say at best, like that's not good enough or something. It's just that I didn't know. She was like, oh, I'm going to be in LA. I was like, well, why don't we get together? And I came up with two little things. And the first thing was the opening track on the record, Burned. Yeah. And I just was like, a la Black Dog, she's Sass Jordan. Let her just like start with, I just go, there's open space and here's the key and give me something high. She was like, you know? And I was like, more of that. Done
exactly like that.
And I got a riff on it. And that was it. And I had a couple chords after that. So we made that song up and then we had another one and to demo these two things up. She was like, let's do it again. So I don't know. You came out a couple months later or something like that. And that time, maybe it was a longer period of time to write and record. And that's when it was like, wow, we're onto something. It sounds a certain way, you know? And not having written together, and only for those of you who don't know, this is like 2010, like the end of 2010. So I hadn't hung with Sass since 1994, probably. Because I did because I did a Rats record in 1993, like all Love the did the album. Drums, and I was coming out to LA I did the demo of the song High Road Easy, and it ended up, I'm pretty much sure it was the demo ended up being the drums, like for the record, and that was the first song I did. So they kept having me come back out and finish the record in the like spring of 93, and then I did a Canadian run, like a 3-week Canadian tour with her. That summer, and I guess, you know, her record came out, Rats came out in 94, like maybe the spring or something. And right after that Canadian tour, Zach Wilde called me and we had been friends for a couple of years. Like, you want to join my band? So I flew back out to LA because I was in Jersey at the time. We jammed. He's like, yeah, we're going to make a record, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, cool, joining a band, you know, on Geffen with Zach, who I was friends with. He's an amazing player. So I did that. And that's when Sass's record came out, 94, as did Zach's, which is the band was called Pride and Glory, pretty much the same time. And that's when, you know, Sass needed a drummer. I wasn't available anymore. And Taylor Hawkins comes in and kills it. And there you go. He goes on to become, you know,
and
a drum god.
And we hadn't hung out. You and I hadn't hung out and seen each other since that.
See, so that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. So I was assuming that there'd been constant communication through.
No.
After 94, myself with Zach, and we opened up a couple festival shows with Aerosmith, or Aerosmith was headlining, and we both opened up a couple times. And that was probably the last time. So that was like the summer of 94 in like Finland. And
Italy.
And yeah.
Finland, there was Denmark. Yeah. And Germany. Oh, I don't know if you.
Well, you might have done more than we did.
Did that piss you off when Brian left? Did you throw a trash can, or are you kind of like, just like, oh, that's cool, I can deal with it?
He didn't give a goddamn rat's ass.
I don't remember.
She does. See what I'm saying?
It would have probably just been like, oh, here we go again, which, I mean, that is a classic conundrum that happens to any kind of solo artist all the freaking time, is there's, you know, somebody's always leaving. Because, you know,
if Bon Scott can leave ACD, didn't leave. If Bon Scott is not not on the plane, and David Lee Roth leaves Van Halen, you can replace, you know, me and Sass Jordan, you know, with a much better looking drummer like Taylor Hawkins.
Anyway, skip through to 2010 and we somehow get back in touch.
Can I tell you how we got in touch? Simple.
Okay.
Somehow on freaking MySpace. So we have MySpace going on in 2006 or 7, 6, 7, 8, somewhere around there. And there's like some post about Lou Gramm. And I have no idea what it is. I'm just somewhere on MySpace, something about Lou Gramm. And I see a comment, like Sassad added something and said, Lou Gramm rules, something like that. And I was like, I don't remember how it actually came together, but it was something I saw on MySpace, and I wrote back, Sass, what's up? And then we just started messaging a little bit. I was like, oh, if you know, she's back in Canada, had moved back, and I was still in LA. And I said, if you ever come out, we should, you know, I got a studio, we should write. And that was it. So maybe it was like, I don't know, a couple of years later, somehow it worked out, and that was it. So there was 94 to that communication on MySpace was what, like 12, 13 years or something like that. But it worked out, you know? And I wanted to add to that, because I was saying before, I didn't go into this with writing with her with anything other than let's just see what happens, because she's a great singer and it's, you know, I whatever, maybe it'll just end up being a cool song, which ended up being the whole record, which, and there's still, on a side note, there's a whole second record ready. Like, it's, we had all this other stuff. We wrote and recorded so much stuff, which we will get out after the re-release of this one gets out, you know, next year sometime, I would assume. but I hope, you know, I hope it's sooner than later, because that's why that's another story, how this whole thing came about, this re-release. But yeah, it ended up being a band, and I went in like, well, I think, you know, she's this type of musician, she sings this style, I don't want to, you know, inject too much of other things I don't know if she's into. Like, I wouldn't bring her a riff that sounds like, you know, Meshuggah or like, you know, something stupid heavy or some deep, you know, B-side track on a Sabbath record. I was just kind of like, let's go rock. But in there, as you can hear, there's some heavier riffs. Like Nomad was just sitting around with her, and I had a drop tune guitar acoustic, and I went boom, 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 and I was like, oh, that's kind of plodding and, you know, kind of heavy sounding. And she just immediately sang what you hear on that song. It was immediate. And I was like, that's perfect. That's exactly the right thing over this. Let's go. Let's do it. And that's how a lot of things were written. You know, just like
that's
spur of the
exactly,
moment.
That's exactly how a lot of things were written. It was like this fountain. We'd be halfway through writing a song and he'd play something and we'd be like, fuck, what's that? And then we start writing another one. Like in the, like we'd have like three going at once. And then we'd have to keep circling back to finish the one we were just starting, you know, okay, wait, we got to organize this because it was just, it was insane. It was just like it nonstop. Like we hit the well.
Was all this happening in like in the same locale or were you sending tracks back and forth?
No, we were all sitting together in his house at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. In L.A., in Santa Clarita, I had the house I had then. That I had a drums in the living room. And yeah. For all you geek, music geeks, you know, there's got to be some watching this kind of show, right? The first, just this is for, you know, if you like the record, you want to know any little stuff that, you know, you don't know about it. The first two songs we recorded, Burned and Wide Ocean, were done when I had my drums upstairs in a bedroom, like soundproofed, right? And she came out, we did them, and I had a studio on the loft. So we'd hang out in the loft, drums are right around, you know, down the hallway in this bedroom. But somewhere, right after we did those two songs, James Lomenzo, who's the bass player of Megadeth, and we were in Pride and Glory together, and, you know, James has been, you know, we've been friends since the early 90s. He came over, he's like, why you got your drums in the bedroom? I'm like, because I'm in a neighborhood and I can't really blast out the neighborhood with drums. He's like, yeah, but if you had them in your living room, you'd have all that ambience. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But at that time I had been there a while. I knew my neighbors, you know, and everybody was pretty cool. So I wouldn't play at night. So we took my whole kit and all the microphones and all that shit, snaked it down to the living room. And that was in between the first two songs recorded with Sass and all the rest of the record. From that point on, which is 2010, I've always had my drums in a living room or in an open space to get ambient drum sounds. So when she came out the next time, I was like, are you cool if we use a 26-inch kick with no muffling and no hole?
Yeah.
You don't know if, and she goes, I don't care. I go, good.
Because
that's like, that's old school Bonham. That's like, you know, big ass kick drum, big drums in a live ambient room. And I'm going to try to capture that big drum sound organically. And the whole record's done totally organically because I don't know how to do auto tune. I don't know how to do studio trickery. I just know how to turn on mics and hit record and put some EQ on them. And, you know,
No click tracks, right?
No, except for I think maybe that first song Burned. I can't remember. I don't think, maybe not. Maybe because I didn't know Sass, so I was like going with most people assume certain things in the studio. You have clicks, you have drums muffled, you know, they're in a you know, soundproof room. But then when we got to know each other, she's like, she doesn't care about that shit at all. And I was like, good. So that became, I consciously went out of my way to make everything ambient and organic. And I would like use less distortion on guitars. I would overdub with clean guitars, like just kind of thinking Jimmy Page's or something. Don't overdo it. Let the bass have its own world. Let the drums have their own space. And I don't know what I'm doing vocal wise. It's like her voice sounds great. She's singing in a mic. It sounds great. Just put a little compression on it and stick it in the mix. Like I didn't use much, you know, stuff that I wouldn't maybe think about now. You know, it was just real, real raw. And then we got to know each other more. But I still never, even with guitar stuff, oh, you play guitar. It's like I kind of held back and stuck to the vibe of what we were writing. I didn't want to go, oh, I got to show everybody, you know, strut my stuff on guitar because you think I'm a drummer. So now I'm going to, it wasn't about that. It was like, what kind of solo works for the song, you know? And that's how everything was approached.
I always talk about stuff like that. It's like cooking with salt and pepper. It's just salt and pepper rock. A little bit of seasoning, yeah. And that's all you need. And that's what you're, that's what you're describing.
No,
I think he brings up an interesting topic of the new AI movement that's going on in music and AI musicians. I'm interested in what you guys are thinking and feeling about that whole scenario.
I don't care. That's not music. That's not what I grew up practicing to do. I don't care.
I mean, that's such a huge topic, Tina. Like, I don't think we have the time to go there right now because it's not just music. You know, it's all art, all creative arts, you know, writing, art, painting, film, television, everything. You know, I don't even think there's going to be actors anymore because you don't have to pay an AI actor and they look perfect and they do the exact job you want. You know what I mean? And it's the same with music. I think the only domain where we're going to end up being able to possibly still have some kind authenticity, like actual humans actually making the sound, is live. And even then, who knows, you know, with holograms and Christ knows what else. It's a very interesting time right now. And it, like, yeah, it's a long, long conversation. There's nothing we can do about it.
You know,
it's
been
not like we can stop it.
Talking to artists for a while, and it dawned on me one day that potentially you guys are going to end up like the Picassos, and you're going to be, your value is going to be so much greater when you're live, or, and there's a good way to get to you where you have all these copies and paste, you know, posters that are worth basically nothing. I think that's what we're going to, I think that's the way it's going to head. Let's just see if
I hope so. But then you think about what's gonna happen. Like deepfakes and, you know, all the things that they can create from just from your image, that you, making you look like you're singing something or playing something that, and it's not even you. You know what I mean? Like there's so much side hustle with it. You know, you can't really.
Right.
But it's all, to me, it's all a pride thing. It's all like, I didn't, you know, somebody else who put barely any time into something can click some buttons and get a song created out of AI. And and I'm like, it's kind of like, you know, bands that use too much, whatever the level of too much is, fake stuff live. I don't come from that era. And I, you know, I'm 70s. I'm like, you can't touch 70s as far as songwriting and bands and creativity and production. Just forget it. It's like untouchable. It's insane. Because I think about it. This, I'm getting off subject. You could, in the 70s, in 2 hours, listen to FM radio, and you would hear Bohemian Rhapsody into Aqualung into Roundabout into More Than a Feeling into Stairway to Heaven into Skinner, Freebird Live into Hotel California. Like, holy shit. You'd literally
into
have
The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
And yeah. There you go. But that was normal. You didn't go, oh, this is the epic song, you know, the FM station that only plays epics. This is normal rock radio. Freaking Carry On Wayward Son into Roundabout into like a Bohemian Rhapsody. This is what happened. But that was, I mean, there's a bunch of reasons that happened. But the point is AI, cool. If you want to use it, go ahead and use it. If it gets something to where you get from A to B a little quicker, maybe there's benefits to all that. Life is short, you know, all that stuff. But as far as a musician and practicing, whatever Sass did, she woke up one day and goes, I got a cool voice, starts singing, it becomes this great voice. Or maybe she had to work really hard. I don't really know. But whatever it is, it's her with her time. She dedicated whatever chunk of her life to becoming what she is. She didn't have to click any buttons. If she practiced, she practiced. It was half natural, whatever it is. Same with me on drums or guitar or whatever. And there's a pride thing. It's like, that's what I spent my life doing, you know? And I want you to know that when you hear like what we do separately or together, it's from a lifetime of dedication, which is the serious side. You know, it's like, it's, there's so much fun stuff to be had from playing rock and roll and, or, you know, all the good feelings you get out of accomplishments with something you put your life into, you know? And that's what I think we keep working to, you know, keep taking steps upward based on all that, as opposed to just whatever. I just call it cheating, man. I didn't care. You go see any band in the 70s and it didn't Fleetwood Mac, Steely Dan. You're not going to hear any tapes. It's, you know,
to your point, I've talked about this on air numerous times. Every time I fill in on classic vinyl, I find myself just, I go through this state of just awe with the playlist, even though I've heard these songs hundreds of times. But once upon a time, and I could be wrong, but it felt like people wrote songs to really stand out. You went into it saying, okay, how do we make this song great? How do we differentiate ourselves from everyone else by writing something great? Where today, it's almost like people are trying to sound like everything else. There's comfort in just sounding like something else. And you don't hear that unique differentiation from song to song. And I think that's because it used to be real, where now it's artificial.
And I know we're all on the same page, but, and I'm not just talking epics. I'm talking like those freaking Casey and the Sunshine Band hits are just brilliant songs. Freaking Lady Marmalade, it's any of the Elton John pop. It's like just amazing songs. Benny and the Jets sounds nothing like Lady Marmalade, which sounds nothing like 19 from, you know what I mean? Fleetwood Mac, on and on and on. It sounds nothing like The Who from Queen or AC/DC or Aerosmith. Holy shit. From one hit wonder pop, you know, whatever, Steels and Crofts to freaking, it's all just amazing songs and production, and everybody sounds like themselves. And well, I don't know. Well,
and then we got together and tried to recreate that kind of excitement for ourselves in these songs that we wrote for Something Unto Nothing. It was completely that. It was like, let's write, you know, Carry On My Wayward Son. Let's do that one. And then it would just like organically take off from there. It was really us wanting to be in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how it felt like to me anyway. I can't talk for Brian, but
yeah,
it really, it was how do we recreate this excitement?
And outside of Sass and I, our friend Michael Devin, who's a bass player, was crashing at my place for a bit around this time. And he was the bass player in Whitesnake and Jason Bonham and stuff. And so outside of him playing, redoing most of my bass, which he smoked my bass on, he got a better tone. The bass got louder. It was just great. He did a great job. I think he's on most of the record outside of two or three songs. But outside of him there adding to a couple songs, like some little bit of songwriting and just being around, there was nobody else anything else to do with the record. There's no engineers, no producers, there's no label, no managers, just zero. It's just the two of us sitting there. Come on out. You could take over my master bedroom. I'll sleep on the couch in the loft or whatever. And stay for a week or 2 weeks and we get a lot done. You know, we just set our schedules aside to allow that, those chunks of time to do nothing but hang out and write music.
And write.
But with record. No label, no band, no, like nothing.
No,
you know?
Money.
No, zero. There's nothing going. It was just two people going, we're just writing music, hoping that this may come out and people hear it and like it. And here we are now in 2026. The record came out in 12 and it came out in a little distribution deal, played a few shows, did some interviews, you know, but like anything, you know, unless it's like full time, you really, really work it, you know, or unless you just, all your ducks are lined up and you have this hit song, which, you know what I mean? Anything can happen. That's why you do it. Cause in the music business, you never know. You could wake up and have amazing news you didn't know was going to happen, or have some crappy news all related to your, the business of music. You know what I mean? You know, but we take chances because we're lifers.
There's anything that we need, it's connection, especially in the world that we live in today, which is exactly the reason why we created these cards, the Song Story Game. We sit and we talk to artists all the time about the stories behind the songs, the story behind the songs that they loved when they were growing up. And so we put together a game that you can own now and put it on your coffee table. And there's a few different ways you can play it. You can play it just as a conversation starter. You can play it with couples and besties for points, or you can play it in a team setting. Three different ways you can have a lot of fun talking about music. One of my favorite ways to play it is to actually answer the question, give a little detail, and then play the song. This game could go on for hours. It's entirely up to you, but get yours today at pressplay.me.
It's 2013, this comes out. Now we're, as you mentioned, 2025, 26, you remaster it. What was it about revisiting the original that made you want to remaster it? What was there something missing, or you just wanted to enhance it? What was the what was your thoughts when you wanted to go back and take it?
We just wanted to make it sound as good as we could, like
make it sound bigger.
Yeah. I don't know. It does sound bigger. God, the vinyl's amazing. It really does. It's shockingly good. I can't believe we did that. Excellent work, my dear Watson.
Yeah. The label, of course, suggested it. And that's also a bit of enticement to not just re-releasing it exactly like it was. You want to have a little bit of new artwork, remastered. So it's a little more modern, whatever's going on with mastering these days, because we didn't change the mixes at all. And then some bonus tracks, which is a whole other story, which I find very interesting because it was a lot of fun. These acoustic tracks are us live, but it's not like it's not a full band. I think there's four of them, and you get them on the CD because the LP comes with, and remind me, I got it sitting right here. I'm supposed to like unveil it and like open the box up and do that whole thing. I don't know if Sass has hers, but I have mine sitting right here. But anyways, you got the CD inside the LP, right? So you open the LP up and there's a little CD, you know, stuck in the cardboard little slot. And I think, yeah, oh, is that what, That's what it was.
That's the CD, and there's that is the pick that comes with it. Isn't it weird?
You know what I do as a drummer on the road when some people go up to the guitar players and they go, do you have a pick? And the guitar player goes, yeah, here you go, honey. Right? Whatever. So I'll go, I have a pick and I'm the drummer, right? And they'll look at me and like, and I'll go like this.
Oh.
Oh, wow. What's that pick?
What's that?
What's that? Play pick.
I can't see it. It's.
Oh,
it's a heart with it's a heart with headphones.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So, oh, I love this exciting.
I'll open this up in a second. But on the CD, I think is the whole record because I think it's longer than the vinyl allows, right, Sass? It's like a couple songs short on the vinyl. And so then on the CD, you have the full record plus it's like four live tracks. But the live tracks, we call them acoustic stomp. Because when we were sitting, which Sass was coming out, we were still writing. I think we had the whole record done, but we still had all this other stuff we were writing. And I was like, we could just do an acoustic gig. It's like, we can't do these songs acoustic. It's like all guitar, hard, you know, rock, you know, amplified guitar driven stuff. I'm like,
he needs drums. Yeah.
I go, we could hold on. And we take the song Burn and I just put acoustic guitar on, sitting in the living room. And I go, I don't have to play it like, I'll just do this. And I started doing a different little thing and whatever. And then I go, but I'll put a bass drum underneath. I put a, you know, got a bass drum. So there, boom, boom, boom. And I'm just going by and she's like, ba da da. And I play the thing and we did it. And she was like, cool. And I go, let's try another song. We ended up just doing all the songs, acoustic stomp vibe. We went and played the Viper Room in LA. I don't remember opening for somebody or we just ended up doing a gig there. The two of us.
It was a Viper. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when the record came out, well,
did you have a hi-hat?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I put a tambourine on the hi-hat. So I go like Zeppelin 3 style, boom, tap, boom, tap, you know, like that old stomp stuff. And I'd have a 12 string and we just make the songs fit that vibe. And and then the record came out and Jeff Tate from Queensryche had his like version of Queensryche when there was like a bit of a battle going on with between the Who Owns the Name or whatever.
Unusual music business.
Yeah. And then Simon Wright was the drummer with Jeff at the time. And they had a tour, but Simon had to do something else. So they asked me to fill in. And it was like playing the whole Operation Mindcrime record. And our manager, Jamie, at the time, was like, we're trying to see if we get some tours. Basically, Jeff said, hey, if you guys, you know, we can't afford to take a full band out. But if you guys want to have your band open, we can probably pay you barely anything, but you'll get to open. We're fine. We can't afford it. So it ended up, well, Brian, you're already on the bus playing drums. Sass, sing some backups in the show and jump on the bus with us. And then we could do our acoustic stomp. So we did a month.
I sang that. What's that song? Sister Mary.
Sister Mary. That was Sister Mary, period.
But then you're on stage more. You were singing backups in some other songs too.
I was so bored.
This is what you and Rudy were talking about, the urinator.
Yes, the urinator. It's the urinator. Okay. Yeah, Ryan was on the urinator.
Oh, yeah, totally. We had a great time. We were playing cool theaters and we got to do our like five song set or whatever and go to, you know, in the merch booth and hang out. But it was, so we'd literally do that. And then I take the shit off stage, the bass drum and hi-hat. And then I have my drums already set up and I do the Queensryche show. Or the Jeff Tate show. I call it Jeff Tate because, you know, really it was all about Jeff at the time. Anyways, that's where this acoustic stomp stuff came from. Somebody recorded it, literally just recorded it in the audience and sent us the copy. I don't even know who it was. I just know I had it on my laptop.
The sound guy, that young guy, I forgot his name, starts with a T.
Oh,
I can't think of his name.
Sound
but
guy.
You know what?
Did a stereo mix live recording of it.
The most amazing part about all of it, Brian, and everybody else is the
was my guitar playing
audience. No, the audience had come to see Jeff Tate, which is like a specific sound. Come on.
Yeah.
And then out trots me and him before the show starts. We and with an acoustic guitar, a kick drum and a hat and me. And people are like, what the fuck is what the fuck is this nonsense? Then we start, and the whole place, every single time we did it, the place would go nuts. the place would go nuts because it was fucking intense. It was intense, brother. How do you make an acoustic guitar, a kick drum, and a voice intense? Well, listen to Acoustic Stomp, ladies and gentlemen.
Is there footage of that out there? Is there footage of that out there?
Yes, there is.
Okay, we got to find that.
There's a as far as if I remember correctly, I think there's only like a little snippet of the first time we did it at the Viper Room.
Yeah, there is a snippet of that, but there's a full stuff of us. It was actually, it's in Canada, and we're doing Baby I'm Amazed, which of course is not a Sun song. What else do we do? I think there's other stuff.
On wait, you're right. We did this a couple more times after that tour.
In that huge theater when you came out with the
Sass had a couple solo
you
gigs.
Were sweeping the stage.
What? What happened?
Man, don't you remember? You're like, dude, I'm going to go out before we go on, and I'm just going to take this broom, and I'm just going to fucking sweep the stage like, you know, like the Zeppelin cover. I don't even know what the fuck you were on about. It was hysterical. And he went out, and he had like a hat on, and he had his thing on. He's just like, and there's like a spotlight on the stage. There's a whole place. Oh, because it was a Sass Jordan show. It wasn't a Sun show.
Yeah, it was Sass.
That's right. But we did do some of the Sun stuff as
yeah, we
well.
Did. Yeah.
I found one. It's at Saskatchewan.
February 1st,
2014.
Yeah, that's
yeah, that would be it.
I think that's it, yeah. Anyways, fucking hilarious. We had a blast.
Yeah, yep. So there's four songs. That's the only live recordings we have of it, but they sound pretty good. And you can feel the room vibe. Like, you know, it's a decent enough recording. You know, it just feels like you're in the room. And so that's on the that comes on the CD as well. And Sass, while we're talking about the LP CD, there's a term for the packaging. CD. Anyways, it went like, do you know dates? Like, when's this coming out? Or do you know, Dean, did they give you this information?
Out.
Like, I think you can order it now or something.
Yeah, you can totally
I think
order
you can
it
order it now. Yes.
It's out.
It was the video that came out last week.
It's out. I'm looking right now.
Yeah, you can order it right now. And when does it get shipped now, as far as I know?
Deluxe editions available through web store.
Yeah.
Now, here's something I want to touch on for you both that I absolutely love. I was a kid of the 45 generation. Like, I had 45s up the wazoo. And you're doing A and B side releases. You're doing A and B side releases like 45s used to do, an A and a B side.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. With each single, there's a B side. Yeah.
Which I loved. I was always the person I got a 45. I'd always play the B side almost immediately.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you find a gem on there that, like, for example, I love The Outfield. They put on a B side song called Tiny Lights that they never released. It was only on that B side of that 45. And it's like a song I loved, right? So sometimes you get a magic moment, you know.
Well, I think it was Tesla's Mechanical Resonance. I think the B side is I prefer the B side over the A side. So yeah, B side's good stuff.
Hey, so what's cool here is when I first heard the songs, the reason I loved it, it harkened back to a time when I'm going to sound like such an elitist here, but when rock was more pure. What I consider to be like just the garage band era. Do you remember like being 15, 16, the first time you got together with some friends, you plug in your amps, you play, and there's like this magic. You're like, shit, this sounds good.
Yeah.
and that's what it felt like when I heard it. It's like, oh man, this is just going back to just rock that sounds good. And from what you're describing, it seems like the vibe, the flow, everything about this experience was just all about, this is vibing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It has a naivety to it. That's so spontaneous and joyful. That's so great about it.
I was just going to say, in addition to that, you also have to consider if, you know, just in talking about it or if somebody's listening to the record, you want it to sound like a band. You know, for me playing a couple, you know, even playing bass on most of the demo stuff, my goal is not to go, oh, it's me. I want to sound like a band. I just want the drummer to play the cool stuff on drums, the guitar player to play, you know, the bass player, and Sass sings, and we sound like a band. So that's there's no like, you know, Showboat Sammy where he's, you know, got to, you know, let you know it's me at all. But at the same time, we didn't start this with a goal of, we have a band project we're starting. It was, it became that not until I'd say 8, 9, 10 songs into this thing. Like Sun Songs is Something Out of Nothing was close to one of the last one or two we wrote, you know, for the record. It was right at the end. And so we're that far into this thing with no band name, no discussion of, well, should we? I mean, I think we might have said, you know, this would be a cool LP or something, but it was just like chunks of songs would come in and record them, she'd split, come back out, write more. And then finally, like 7, 8, 9 songs in, you're like, oh, maybe this is,
what are we going to do with this?
Has its own sound. So listening to the record, it's, you know, it's something I never even think about because I just look back and go, yeah, we did this. But it started out as we'd never written together. The first thing you hear, those first vocals, and those aren't, and we also with Sass, the great thing is I could just like stick the mic up and go record. And then it's just a matter of which take do you want. It's not like, oh, she's got to work on it. Maybe here and there, you got to figure out a couple things. But like in the case of Burned, that was the first thing she sang that may have even been take one or two. I'm talking from nothing there to a vocal. That's what it was. That was the lyric. That was the melody. And then I think we talked like, do you want, when you come back out, maybe she's like, no, it's fine. Yeah, with the song Raised, same thing. All those vocals were, those were trial vocals to like, I got some lyrics. I got some melodies. Let's try it. Let's throw a harmony on this. And then let's listen. Cool. Let's leave it. That's how most of the record was done with her. You know, there's
much Lang style production where it's like one word or one sentence at a time.
No. You'd be really like, it's surprising that which just means what she was doing, what she felt initially was what it was going to be. And I do like the fact that first vocal that you hear on the record, that is the first thing she sang before we even called Sun, before we thought of writing multiple songs, before we even talked any further than let's do a writing session together. That's the result right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's rare. That's rare stuff, you know?
Yeah, it is. I've never done it before or since.
Yeah.
OMG. Anyway, so yeah, that's the story of Sun, ladies and gentlemen.
That is. And there is a second ready to go.
Yeah, I can't hear that.
And there is a second album ready to go.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so then the quick story with that is over these years since, you know, the record came out, we put a band together, Tommy Stewart on drums. He was the original drummer in Godsmack, and we toured together in 2000. I was playing with Ozzy and he was playing with Godsmack and we became buddies, and somehow we kept in touch a bit. And I was just thought he was a great powerhouse drummer, and he's a great guy. So I asked him, do you want to do a live show, be in the video? And if you watch the the Nomad video, I think, you know,
he's in there with the sticks.
Well, if there's an award to be given for the only drummer that literally used tree branches in a video, that's Tommy Stewart. So you see him playing with took a tree branch, and we're outside like under this old tree. He was like somewhere by my house. Let's go over here and do a video. And I was like, you know, so he grabbed branches and played the.
He's awesome. Awesome.
And we had Michael Devin was on bass for a couple shows. I think he's in like the On the One video. And
no, he's in Nomad.
Yeah, and he's in both of those. Yeah. And then
Beardless.
Yeah. And then we had Marty O'Brien on bass, our buddy, who's a great bass player. He was in Lita Ford for many years. I remember he left. He got the Lita Ford gig when we were doing shows. And I think he's in Daughtry now. I think he's been playing with Daughtry. Yeah. So I see Marty, like we do Dio bowling together. Marty's a great guy. So we did have this band and we did some shows, you know, a couple, you know, Vegas and LA and stuff. But the point is, we did a couple of those Sass shows, acoustic stomp things. But it's like, it's tough when, you know, you're not really a full band and you're not living in the you know, a shitty little apartment, all you together eating ramen noodles when you're 22 or something. It's like we have other stuff going on. So we can't just like only do this, and it's not paying bills unless we want to just sell everything and live in a shitty little apartment. Then maybe we could, you know, get somewhere. But anyways, it's for lack of a better term, it kind of fizzles. Right. Years go by, but every now and then I'd write her and I go, what was it called? I go, quote, not a good day to die, unquote, rules. The fucking song rules. And she's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, yeah, it's fucking cool. I go, so does this. What that means is we have, it's, I would send her like an MP3 reminding her of some of the songs we'd written that aren't on the record. And I'm looking at this list. We got a few covers. We have like 6, 7, 8 original, you know, originals and a few covers. It's a record sitting there that we, and when we record, we always are in like mix mode. I don't understand any other way. Like when we do drums first, I EQ the drums. I get them sounding balanced. I hear them, how they're exciting to me. I want to hear this. I don't want to hear just like my basic little drum track on, like, touched by any kind of EQ or compression or any balancing. Like, I want to find the vibe. And then I play guitars and bass to that. And then she sings over and I'm always EQing as I go, constantly in mix mode. So our demos sound pretty good. Like, they're, because we want to listen back fucking excited. You know, it's not just like, oh, it's, there's no fix it in the mix. I'm always fixing as we go and tweaking. So all these demos sound pretty good. I'm like, I want to put at least that song out. Like, that's an, that is an epic 8-minute song called, one day I texted her, I go, cool song title, Not a Good Day to Die. And she's like, cool. And then we wrote it. It's a whole fucking thing. It's like 8-minute Zeppelin meets Floyd meets whatever. It's just a thing. And it's, and the vocals, I had all this music. I had a little melody. She sings it. I'm like, oh, that's exactly the right way to sing the melody. Then she comes up with this and that and all this other harmony shit, and it's killer. And I'm like, I think people should hear this, but we're not just going to put it out on our social media. That's why this re-release came out. We talked to Greg, who runs the label, and he's like, cool, but the record's been, you know, this record's a long time ago. You should put a re-release out, remaster it. Okay, let's do it. Let's do that. So this was really, it started out as just a way to get the ball rolling. Yeah, to get to the second one. I'm glad we're doing this. It's nice to see it out there and hopefully some, you know, to get some new fans and new listeners who dig it, because we had a great time making it. And I think there's a lot of cool stuff on the record. It represents, big, loud, fun rock record, and with real, you know, passion and focus put into it, you know, without any outside anything affecting us, you know. It's just two people make his music and bam, there you go. Without SAS having a label, okay, your next single and your next record, and only the last one sold this much, we got to sell more, we got to do that, but whatever. We need this producer, we need you to look this certain way. You know what I mean? Whatever that shit is that goes in with having a record deal, we had zero pressure, like zero at all. So anyways, we have this whole second record going on, and I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad we're doing this and it's out and stuff, but I'm really excited because it's new to both of us to have anybody hear these new songs. And I think it's at least as good or better than this, but it's really just more of a representation of where we're at. It's all from the same period of time, you know? So it's not like, oh, we learned and grew or whatever and made a second record. It's just more shit we recorded, you know? But I'm telling you, Not a Good Day to Die, the 8-minute song, first single. Screw it. It's just like a trip, and it's cool. It's like, it's just cool. I mean, I put it on, I'll crank it up. I'm like,
they don't know what Not a Good Day to Die is, one of the new songs. That's what he's referring.
And I call up Tommy Stewart. I'm like, Tommy, you want to play drums? Cause like, he's been playing live with us, and we did a Kiss cover called I Stole Your Love, but we did it like grungy and slowed down halftime. And Tommy's on drums with that, all big drum sounds. Tommy comes over and I'm showing him the song. He's like, wait, dude, what, how many parts, how many stops and starts? But he did it, and I just kept editing it together. It was like, you know, just no click track, just play. And so that's the song. But there's another one. We're sitting there on this second record, you know. I want to call it Two, like T-O-O, because people think that these guys not know their homonyms and homophones and shit. But it's our second record, Two, SAS One. And here, I mean, it's Son One and Two. The other one.
This
two.
Is why I call him the Tasmanian Devil.
So, but she's... Like, she's sitting there.
I love it.
She's telling me the story. She's telling me the story. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. I'm listening. I'm like, oh my God, does she know how to fucking talk, right? And then she goes, she finishes the story and goes, you know, I don't want to be like this. And she goes, I don't want to be like this, but I am, right? And I go, oh. And so that's how the story ends. And I go, hold on. How would you sing that? And she goes, what? I sing it. Like, just, what would you, how? And she goes, I don't want to be like this, but I am. Right. And I go, she sings it totally in a key, doesn't know the key. It's a bluesy lick. And I find the key on the guitar. I find the notes and I go, oh, you're in C minor. I go, okay, you're right about here. And we fucking wrote this song called I Don't Want to Be Like This based off of that.
But
and
I, was I like, am.
You got to sing it in your most like sexy Marilyn Monroe singing to, what is it, JFK or you know, what he's to Happy Birthday, whatever. I'm like, you got to go for that because we have nothing like that. Like, what's her face? The jazz singer to heroin Sunday? Addict. No, just 50s. Billie Holiday.
Billie Holiday. Like,
you got to give me that, you know, and I'm like, because we've never done that before. So that's another song. I'm just like, you got to hear her vocals on this.
That's just
like,
crazy.
It's like, it's I'm crazy. Trying to play like George Benson and I'm just putting a shaker in there and I'm going.
And I'm like.
And she's like doing this breathy vocal.
Flamenco kind of shit. Yeah.
I just kept thinking.
In the solo?
Yeah. Or like.
Next year? We have to wait a whole year for it?
What's that?
No, you get special treatment.
Yeah. Come on, teaser.
I want to hear that so bad. No,
it's
so
cool good. Because she's just, because I'm like, you got, it's like all the breath, because all the shit, the most sun stuff is like kind of power vocal. And this is like, I want to be that. It's all this breathy shit. And all the licks, I'm going, oh, I want to be like Lukather in Lionel Richie's hello, you know, is it me? And he's like, boop, and he's doing all this little shit, and it's George Benson. So it's this whole other side of
and
stuff.
Then what's his name from Fleetwood Mac when the drums
The Mick. Drums do kick in the end. I was like, Mick Fleetwood on Dreams.
Yeah,
you know?
Mick Fleetwood, full on. Killer.
Yeah, so you know, like so those but that's how when we write and record, we start going, oh, you gotta give me some Billie Holiday. I gotta get some George Benson. I gotta do some Mick Fleetwood. You know what I mean? And that's it, but it's fun because you're always drawing from your influences. And if a song or a melody or a chord progression, you know, sparks right. off a vibe of that stuff. Just go for it. You know, it's not going to sound like any of them, but you can definitely hear the influence. Yeah.
We're probably going to have to wrap this up, you guys. Yeah. Huh? Isn't anyone hungry?
I was going to say, I could tell you about the album. So if you go to somethingontonothing.com, you can go to the shop and there it'll take you to the Something Unto Nothing packet, the whole package deal there. You get the CD, the LP, the pick, and a tote bag.
You get the pick.
Sass. Oh, the tote pack.
Sass, you get the pick.
Don't be like Brian, everybody.
Don't be like Brian.
Now, the tote bag is wicked. I already took it to the supermarket once.
So if you want the music, if you want the music now on CD vinyl, you can get it now on the website. If you want to get it through streaming, you got to wait through the singles releases. February 20th was I'm the One in Mobile Again or Out. March 13th becomes Nomad and Something Onto Nothing as the B-side.
Yeah.
And then March 27th, the release of No Way Home remastered with the B-side of Crazy Head.
So. Killer!
On that note, let's show the freaking people what they get. Yes. Look at this album cover. Look at this. It's we ripped off Led Zeppelin.
Zeppelin's Into the Outdoor. Looks like Into the Outdoor.
This is a little cardboard. It's not just a paper bag, but we're just kidding because look what happens. You get it set in the mail, you open it up and pow. So you get the cover and they protect it in this, what do you call this stuff?
Cellophane
or something. And inside, the first thing you're supposed to do is smell the record, not the glove.
I was going to say not the glove.
You know, I would, if I could change one thing, I'd request more of that glue smell from the 70s, whatever that, I mean, there's gotta be at least a spray because I don't know. Anyways, it's, so check it out. You got the record cover. There you go. And then you got the back cover. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it has lots of information that everybody needs to know, but you open it up and what happens inside is all
shut the front door. And all lyrics.
You got Les Pauls, basses, a CD right there. I didn't get the pick. They gypped me. Tommy Stewart with his clear acrylic drums. And then the mighty Sass Jordan over here doing a thing. Okay. And it gives you the information. Tells you who these people are. And then the CD right here. And they give you a little slot.
Salesman.
You don't have to lose.
It tells you who these people
are. Going job.
Who are these fucking people? All right, here, after 12 years of sleep, here comes the sun. Look at that.
Oh, that's good.
Like a little,
dude, that was my line, bro.
That's good.
Really?
That is a great line.
Yes, it was.
We were doing some promo.
It could have smelled like tanning lotion.
Yeah, I just remember my old Kiss records had that glue smell.
Is there anything on the sleeve of the vinyl? Pull the vinyl out.
Yes, I got more up my sleeve. Hold on a second.
Wait,
there's more.
Listen,
there's the lyric.
If just somebody asked me a question, somebody pick a song you like on this record, just any song, I don't care.
Nomad.
Burn.
Nomad.
Sass is not allowed to do this because she knows the answers. Who said what?
Nomad.
Nomad. Let's go to Nomad. Okay, look at what. Watch what. This is how much fun you can have with this record. Mobile Again, Sun, Goodbye, Wide Ocean, Did Me No Good, Beginning of the End. That's a guitar solo. That's me saying, like, I know how to do, like, some licks and shit. Burned, Crazy Head, Nomad. Okay, just in case you didn't know, we don't need the cardboard box anymore. So here's our lyrics. Nomad. You probably didn't know that the exact words of the first verse go like this. I was there when the moon raped the night. No escape, no respite, as we searched underground for the nomad. Okay, that's the song. Now you're like, what does she say in the middle? Oh, she goes, I was there when the dogs came to play and the game went astray as we searched through the grave for the nomad.
What a genius.
Brilliant.
Now, I don't really know what she says in the song Did Me No Good. I just know it's a cool, funky riff with a good drum track. You know, I mean, it's one of those things.
It did you some good.
Yeah. But she's like, I think I might have to take credit for the title, Did Me No Good, because I said, sounds kind of like Southern-ish and Saskatoon. So I go, Sass, give me a little Did Me No Good. I don't know what you're going to write about, but she gives me this. This is what she came back with. Green Tangerine, new on the scene. Big, loud, and mean. A lean, bad machine. Fucked me up and broke me in. Took that trouble on a spin. You know you did me no good. It goes, you have all the questions.
Don't read any more lyrics. They sound stupid without music.
Well, let me give you, really? What about some cool ones like, there's some good, it's all good shit.
I want to see the vinyl.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry. Here's the final thing.
Final vinyl.
Look at
there
that.
There it is.
Badass.
Yeah, bang.
It's fun in there. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that
look.
So fun.
It's pretty cool.
That's so
cool. But
now
we gave it all away. There's nothing exciting to find. Maybe they shouldn't buy it.
No, that's it. That's a lot of stuff. Vinyl, that's why
vinyl. You're going to hold it in your hands. I mean, there's the video doesn't do what holding in your hands does.
Look at this. Look at that. That's what you also get. It's not just an LP. It can be a Frisbee. Or it's actually a flattened basketball, because I could do that with a basketball. See how I gave you guys a finger? I wasn't meaning to. It's just I can spin a basketball, you know. But I spin a basketball with my middle finger on my right hand, but on my left. Look at that.
Oh, God. How did I survive?
Multi-talented.
That's what you get. Get to get it. Learn it. Live it. Love it. And then just get into it and then know there is sitting here, I don't know, 45 plus minutes of new old Sun music, part two, you know?
Yes.
And there's more where this came from. You know, it's all sitting here and I don't even think we're going to like remix it. It's in its demo stage, but we're both like, we don't care. It sounds good. But anyways, that's the next one. Hopefully that's next year. This comes out and I'm glad it's out and it's cool. Now it gives me a good reason to, you know, finally get a record player, which I definitely need because I have finally got all my records when I was a kid from Jersey. They're all out here now. So I got a lot of, so this can add.
You got a lot of record listening to do.
Yeah. If we were closer, we should have a record listening party.
We've talked about that.
Well, I think Don is in Florida.
Yeah, I'm in Tampa.
And you're in Florida. Tina is in
Indiana.
Shit, guys.
North Carolina.
They also put a $100 bill in here now.
Fantastic.
Like a Willy Wonka certificate.
We should have done that.
We should be cool, like five Willy Wonka things, and then
yeah, and you know what you get? You get free tickets and backstage pass, and there you get to drink with us at our next show.
Then they only Willy Wonka.
We're only going to do one event where we show up and mingle with the people.
And mingle with the little people.
Because, well, I don't know if they're little. Because if you put us together, it just doesn't stop.
Maybe, would it be, we're, like if we did, because we haven't even talked about this, but if we did, I would assume, like, to keep it simple, we do a few acoustic songs, right? We could do an acoustic song thing and just play the record and have a party and everybody just drinks and hangs out and we maybe
that's
do.
Sweet. Yeah.
But would it be like Toronto or would it be LA? Like, I don't care.
Let's do it in LA.
Let's do it in LA.
I hate LA.
You too.
Well,
I don't put that in the thing.
She meant
I hate LA. That'll be the headline.
You're so not. You're so not. What's his name? Gary. What's his name? Who wrote "I Love LA"? What's his not Gary Newman?
Oh,
what's his name?
Randy Newman.
Randy Newman. Randy Newman.
Yeah, Randy
okay.
Newman.
Okay.
Who? No,
who's
I think something. It would be Raleigh, North Carolina. Would be cooler.
We can rally to Raleigh.
That's cool.
Yeah, right.
It'd just be cooler. It's
hey,
just
that's closer for me.
LA is too
fucking...
The problem is we
my dad lives in North Carolina.
I'll host a field party in our backyard. Big bonfire.
Something like that's way more fun. More what we're about. We're not LA.
Yeah, I know, but we're like...
Toronto sucks too.
Can you imagine the neighbors when they hear Sass's voice across the neighborhood and they're like, oh my God, who is that? That's incredible.
Yeah. We could pull it off in our backyard. Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't care where it is. But I would do it. I'll
be there.
Toronto or LA makes the most sense because people like we have history. You know, Sass is Toronto, I'm in LA and she used to be here. So like just for making it a thing where people come out or gets a press there, play the record. Have some drinks, do an acoustic stomp. I got an acoustic guitar. I got a couple here. We can do a little quick rehearsal or not, whatever. But we just, or I could get an acoustic guitar up there somewhere. You know, it's easy. I get a bass drum. Yeah,
I like the idea of Raleigh better, even Indiana, Florida.
I'll go wherever. But yeah, well, maybe that's something we'll make happen. But we can't do the golden ticket thing now. I guess because. We'll figure it out. We'll just do it online. One person
it would have
wins.
To be
online. One person wins.
You can do it with the second album. You can do a little, do it like a golden ticket thing.
Yeah, that'd we definitely so, should.
People be buying albums just to open it up and going.
Wouldn't that be amazing if that actually works? Nobody's going to do that.
Oh, how do you know? If you build it
I
up.
I don't know.
People if you build it up right. If you build it up right and there's a golden ticket in there and especially.
Right?
Why isn't it? And you're on the money, Sass. Like it's you as the money or whatever.
Yeah.
What?
Golden ticket. Yeah. I mean, I think it would be easier. I mean, I don't know. Definitely a golden ticket, though. That would be super fun. And I think that people would buy multiple.
Like a Willy Wonka thing, man. You can make a whole Willy Wonka.
I don't understand why no one's done that yet.
You know what it is? I think it's. Not with the LP, a golden ticket. I think somebody at a band at shows, which is a great idea, they've left something under a ticket buyer's seat. You know, they have an assigned seat and if you get there and you get, oh shit, it's a backstage pass, like something like that, you know, that everybody goes to the show psyched that they might get that extra.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Rick Springfield.
Def Leppard did that recently.
Who
Def Leppard did that? There's a video of Rick Allen out there, like before the show, sticking something underneath somebody's seat.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, there you go. That must be what I saw. Yeah.
Rick Springfield's giving away a trip to some island, some concert island or something somewhere. And he's doing it as like basically a sweepstakes through social media.
Do you remember when MTV did this thing where bands would show up at somebody's house?
Yeah.
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 Well, that could be the golden ticket.
Do you guys, in all honesty, do you think when Rick Springfield plays Springfield, Massachusetts, he does better business just by default? Do you think?
Springfield and Springfield?
Yeah. I mean, he should be a live record.
What about Springfield, Missouri?
He'd play there too. He could do a Springfield tour. There's probably three or four in the country.
The Springfield tour.
Springfield and Springfield, man. That's like multi-platinum right
Springfield
there.
Springfield and Springfield with Springfield.
I just did the Legends of Rock cruise. They weren't going to call it that until they booked me. It was just going to be called
a cruise.
It was called just Guys in Rock. They was called Guys in Rock Cruise. And then I said, I'll play. They go, oh, cool. Now we can fucking call it Legends of Rock. But I play with Gene Simmons, and Rick Springfield was on the cruise. And I'm friends with a couple of guys in the band, the drummer and guitar player. And we went and saw Rick a little bit, do his thing. That was cool. I'd never seen him before. You know, I had a funny concept. It's totally got nothing to do with anything, but I'm like, he came into the dining room and I was like, okay, there's Rick Springfield, right? You know, I guess he's considered one of the most best looking men in the world, right? And I'm like, what would happen if Rick walked in a room and there was Brad Pitt and there was Johnny Depp and that other guy, the other actor?
How old are they? Wait a minute.
John Stamos.
Thank you, Tina.
Rick is still looking. Rick still plays without a shirt on. And my daughter saw him on one show, like a video, and she went, oh, he's good looking. Who's that? It's like, that could be your grandfather.
Yeah.
Let's
just go in their prime. It's all like whatever their prime year is, all of them come in their prime. And they all look at each other. And you're like, holy shit, it's the four best looking men in the world. They're arguably in the top. Do they look at each other like, fuck, Brad? Like, does Rick look at Brad and go, you're really good looking? You might even be a little better looking than me. And then does like Depp go, yeah, all you guys are good looking, but I don't know. Maybe Brad is a little bit better looking than Stamos, but Stamos like, no, I think Springfield is better looking than Pitt. And I think Springfield takes it.
I'd probably vote for Springfield over all the guys you mentioned there.
Okay. But then I'm going mightiness in the room. You got these incredibly good looking guys, but then you go, yeah, but maybe then who's the most famous? Who's the one with the most charisma that walks in the room? And I'm going, might be Depp. Depp might be, the other guys might think they have something. Then Depp comes in and does his thing. And I was like, we just got to give it to Johnny Depp. You know?
And then I walk in and I go, who the hell let him in here? What the hell?
I'm going to go lay down my thing here.
Tish, Brian, to wrap this up, because that's what we got to do. Why don't you tell us the 7-Eleven joke?
Let's finish on this. I'm glad you brought that up. If I was going to be a comedian and I got one opening joke, I hope you guys like it. I told it somewhere else. I made this up in high school, and I'm still impressed that I came up with this.
You wrote this joke.
It's hilarious.
I could do, like, if you guys know that joke called the Aristocrats, there's a really long joke. Which they say that dude from Full House tied in. See how that ties into John Stamos? Whatever that comedian's name is. They said he did the best.
Saget.
Yeah. So anyways, it could be drawn out, like made into a skit kind of. But anyways, I'll get to the meat of it. Here it is. What disease do you get when you fuck the girl that works at 7-Eleven? Slurpees.
That's so wrong.
I got the... You guys, I got... You know the chick fucking Jane at 7-Eleven? Like, dude, she's hot. I'm like, yeah, I banged her last night. Really? Yeah, but something weird's going on, dude. I went to the doctor and they said I got a bad case of Slurpees. Come on, get it? 7-Eleven.
And on that note,
7-Eleven,
something
Slurpees.
Under nothing.
It's great.
Going, that's something under nothing.
Is setting. The sun is setting.
Sun's next record.
Guys, thank you so much.
A bad case of Slurpee.
For being here with us.